All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and as always, we're taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots to talk about tonight. We've got the NBA Conference Finals underway, and you've got the obvious last night in the Cleveland Cavaliers making quick work of the Toronto Raptors and getting their starters even more rest than they already had in doing so. But the shock, I suppose, of the first game of either series is Oklahoma City winning at Golden State. And we'll talk about that here in just a little while. The Pacers and the NBA draft now set. 76ers with the first pick in the draft. Lakers number two, losing Kobe Bryant, of course, retiring. But they will get the number two pick overall. Pacers number 20 overall, and still no word yet where or if Troy Williams will enter the NBA draft. Lots of stories at this point as he is working out for professional teams. Came out the other day. He's 50-50 right now to go or to stay. We'll attack the obvious right now and the one that affects us here on the radio the most, and that would be if Troy stays, because right now they have, if he comes back, there would be one scholarship over the limit they are committed to. For the team itself, certainly having a potential NBA player and what Troy Williams can do for you would certainly be nice to have on this team to begin with, but you got to work with the scholarship issues too. So
yeah, that's part of the game that's forced the hands of coaches when guys now can go even earlier and stay in that process even longer. You have to make some decisions to grab guys when you can grab them. Mm-hmm. So if he does decide to come back, which part of me, I don't see how that.
I still don't see it either.
But it would put Indiana in a tough spot. I don't know how you fix that problem. And they always say these things work themselves out, and it always has, to be fair, but there hasn't always been the happiest of Disney endings to these either. So that's a tough spot because you want your program, as a fan, you want to do it the quote-unquote right way, and you want to do it the best way possible, but that's not always conducive to the setup of the rules. The rules that give these kids so much advantage for being evaluated and doing it puts their coaches in a really tough spot how to fill the roster. And it's not, you can talk about the athlete's bill of rights and all that comes into it. So I guess if you tell a kid, hey, we're not taking your scholarship away, well, then how does that work? I don't know how that works. That would be a great question for Fred Glass or somebody who deals with that on a daily basis, because let's say that you're the 13th guy in final scholarship and they're like, hey, Troy's coming back. And you're like, hey, what about the guys that haven't played here before, mm-hmm. stepped in? Well, we've promised them, we've done all that. It's like, well, the Bill of Rights says this and this. The reason I think that it's there to protect the kids or the numbers is you can't just pull a scholarship and say, see you later.
Right.
That's the key to that. So do you transfer a scholarship? Do you tell one of the kids you've already committed to, hey, maybe this isn't going to work out because of a numbers game? I don't know how that works, and those decisions aren't going to be made lightly. So just like Tom Crean has taught us over the years, relax, let these things work themselves out, and then they'll work themselves out, because there's no point in getting upset about it if Troy decides to keep his name in the draft and move in that direction. And the other thing people have to remember as well is, the second Troy decides he wants to do that and hires an agent, then there is no 50-50 anything.
Right.
Then it's 100% then zero. And the other thing people have to remember,
or stays in the draft.
The other thing that I think gets lost in this too, and we're here not to clear things up per se, but to make you aware of them, going pro doesn't necessarily mean the NBA.
Yeah, exactly.
There are other leagues around the world that pay really good money for guys that can play basketball.
Right.
And playing in the D League for $22,000 mm-hmm. isn't everybody's idea of a place to be. You look at a guy like Jordan Hulls, who's making really nice money mm-hmm. in Central Europe or wherever he is now. He's in Poland for a while, and he's here and he's there. You see, if you follow the great Twitter feed, if you're into this stuff, at Pro Ball Hoosiers is great. This guy updates you from every day on guys playing. So he tells you, hey, Bracey Wright had 18 in Turkey yesterday. Earl Calloway had 10. So if there are other outlets. So when you hear that Troy's not in a mock draft, so when you hear Troy's 50-50 and you go, well, what is he 50-50 about? There's no one's going to take him. Well, that's not always the case in figuring out whether you can play at the professional level. It's not pigeonholed just to the NBA. The dream is the NBA.
Right.
The buzzword is the NBA. The talk about is being the NBA, but you hear a lot of people and you see a lot of people post dumb things that say, well, no one's looking at this guy. What do you mean he's going to the NBA? Shouldn't he come back to school? Well, yes and no.
Well, again, we talked about this
that's
before.
That's completely fair.
It comes down to being a professional and what you can do for your game as a professional. You're seeing more and more players make effects on the NBA and the NBA playoffs that are guys that were considered also-rans for a while in a lot of ways, maybe disappeared, maybe were overseas, maybe were in the D-League for a long time, but get their chance to develop themselves, work on themselves a bit, become a better player, and become suddenly a valuable guy. Heck, we the San Antonio Spurs have done this with European guys, obviously, that they stashed away for a couple years. Exactly.
Sure.
But the fact there is, it just because you don't go in right away doesn't mean you can't go in 3 years and be a very valuable player. Everybody seems to be acknowledging all the things that most IU fans have seen, which is he has a superior athleticism. He has some of the skills that you want out of a guy that's going to handle the ball and some decision-making issues that he certainly needs to work on and some ball-handling issues that he needs to work on.
Every player
and some sewing up of his jump shot that he needs to work on. So, you know, he's far from walking into the NBA and being ready to go. But as a Pacers fan for the last several years, we've watched a lot of mid-round picks get picked by the Pacers and also not be ready to play right away in the NBA with any significant minutes. So it's not like, you know, Troy Williams is suddenly in this basket that's shameful as a professional or as a potential professional
it's
basketball
not.
Player. Again, mid-round, first-round draft picks aren't ready to play.
And the other part of this that's interesting, as it all is interesting in my opinion, is when that process began of getting with teams to figure out whether you can or can't or they're interested or not interested, you wouldn't go through that process if you were a finished product.
Right.
Ben Simmons isn't at the draft camp.
He doesn't have to do that. Exactly.
Brandon Ingram's not at the draft camp.
Right. There's no question.
So there's a reason why they're going through this. And when some fans get a little upset, like, oh, what's he doing that for? He's not ready to go. Well, let the NBA general manage it. It's not up to – it's not, you can't have it both ways, and this is not going to change in my view. You can't love it when Troy's here doing really well and then tell him he can't go try and do something else. You can't have it both ways.
The whole idea, whether it's Tom Crean talking about his program or any other coach talking about their program or actually existing with their program, it's all about player development, not just on the court, but it's also personal. And for a guy like Troy, it is on the court because it's the NBA potentially here. But that's the whole point. You develop them. You're trying to make them better the entire time for your team, but also for where they're going to go after that.
Yep,
but it might be China for all we know.
But the contrarian side of that is if you want to be a professional basketball player and work at your game 15 hours a day, you can't do that in the college level. You can't do that.
You don't have the same kind of time frame.
You don't because you have to take classes. The NCAA does not let you play basketball for a job in the NCAA unless you're taking classes, and then you can make them as much money as you need possible. So it's not a conducive, it's not a conducive environment to develop players because of the time restrictions, because they want you to be student athletes. And some people look at it through jaded glasses and say, well, you make $1 billion off of every tournament. Tell me about the student athlete a little bit more. But until the rule is changed, the development of players is A, on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's a self-starter. Not everybody's in the gym.
Correct.
If your boss tells you to go in the gym or you're not going to have a job,
right. That's
a little bit different than saying, hey, you're going to run some wind sprints or shoot an extra 100 free throws at the end. There's a whole different carrot there.
Because keep in mind, it's been a while coming now, but the top-level programs in football or basketball, they only have certain numbers of hours that they can work with these kids. They're not spending those on dribbling drills
and
shooting drills. You know, you might get a little bit of it.
The other thing you have to remember,
you're not spending time on that because you got to spend time on the team stuff.
When you're out of season, that time is shrunk greatly.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a couple hours a week where your head coach, the guy that's in charge of your player development, can help you.
Right.
There's only a couple hours you can work with the strength guy. There's only a couple people who can be in the gym when you have open gym and stuff like that going on. Heck, we know the rules about even directors of basketball operations can't go do some of that stuff. So it's a very convoluted system. And to figure out what's best for you, you have to see what's out there. He knows what's here.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what – maybe he needs 6 hours of instruction a day. Maybe that's what he craves, and he can't physically get that there because of the rules.
The nice thing for Troy is, I think, over time, we said this on the show, over time what you didn't hear from Coach Crean is how hard Troy was working all the time.
No. He would go out of his way to point out other guys that were.
That's exactly right.
Never mentioned.
And that is telling from the standpoint of up to this point in time. Troy is hearing right now from these people in the NBA specifically what his flaws is. So he's getting all the good information. At some point in time, he's got to take it upon himself to kind of improve himself to those levels if he wants to play. And sometimes you get smacked in the face with not getting drafted when it's your dream to get drafted to make that happen even more so. Now, I'm not saying he hasn't been working since the season's over. I have no idea. I would hope that he would have taken it seriously through this whole period. Rumors are he had some kind of body fat thing at the combine that was one of the bottom 10 in there. Now, does that matter if you're that elite of an athlete? I don't know. Was he sick? I don't have any idea.
No.
But it suggests that maybe he's still not working to the level that you're expected to work at to be an NBA player.
And only Troy can answer that question. Know. The question that that Tom Crean has to answer is he has 13 scholarships, and that's
how do you get 14 into it if that happens.
And it's not going to be shoehorned in a jar of Vaseline. That's for sure. That doesn't work that way. So what happens next? You got to wait till that bridge gets crossed. So Troy, I guess, was supposed to work out today for the Clippers, according to Inside the Hall's Alex Bozic. He tweeted he did not do that today. So if you want some news on that, Yogi's at the Clippers pre-draft camp and is looking to get involved with all of that. So if there's any big news that pops out, yeah, we'll throw it your way. But again, it's sit and wait. The NBA draft lottery was yesterday. I think it went according to Hoyle, which never happens, and it did. So what does that do? I don't know. What does it do? The bad team's getting the best players again. There's not two. I don't know. I don't know if this is
how many times the 76ers are going to need to draft number one or two overall and not be any good on the floor.
How are they going to pay these guys when those rookie contracts run out? Well, you try to Golden State it and get it right, and that's a very difficult thing to do.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is a phone number. We'll talk a little bit about the Pacers and then move on to the NBA Conference Finals when we get back from the break. Got to take that quick break. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming note for you. We got Reds baseball right after the show, 7 o'clock. Starting off this time, not any join in progress like the last couple nights.
Back in Cincinnati tonight.
Cleveland again tonight and tomorrow, 7:05. And then Friday, 7:05 with Seattle in town. And Saturday, 4 o'clock with Seattle in town. So plenty of Reds baseball coming up, including immediately after the show, so don't go anywhere. 333-2665 is a phone number. Pacers end up with the number 20 draft pick, which is about where they expected to be. What can the Pacers get out of that? Obviously, a lot to be determined there. How about what do the Pacers need? Do the Pacers need a point guard?
Yes.
Do they need a center? Do they need a scorer off the bench? Do they need to get younger? I would say they definitely need to get a little younger with some of their bench players.
I think the Pacers need to do everything except replace whatever Paul George does.
Not replace, or
add to it. Yeah. I think that's completely fair. And if Mark Monteith wrote a column for the Pacers.com, 6 takeaways from the Nate McMillan hiring. I'm going to breeze through these so you kind of get the feeling. McMillan didn't pursue the position he was pursued. McMillan will keep the same size staff. The nature of McMillan's offense will reflect the roster. That's point number 3. Number 4, the Pacers appear to be in a market for a point guard. Number 5, McMillan will be tougher than Vogel, but not as tough as he was in the past. And number 6 is the one that sticks out. Miles Turner's future is likely at center. So that's interesting as well, because obviously being with LaMarcus Aldridge back in Portland, he has seen a very talented style player like this who can step out and hit it. But it sounds like he feels perhaps that he will be more effective around the basket, and he can step in to play the 4. But that's interesting, because that's going to put a angle on what you move forward with. Mahimi's a free agent. You know that. Lavoy Allen didn't help you when you needed the most help at center. Jordan Hill, that free agency move didn't work out. I don't know. Rakeem Christmas, Shane Whittington, all these 6'11 guys that are playing in the D-League. You need upgrades, because Larry Bird told you in that press conference he thought they should beat the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, absolutely.
And after watching them play, it's very hard to argue with
exactly.
Them. So the Pacers, I think, can get better at a lot of spots. Where I think they can't get better, where I don't think the growth potential is at pick 20. The draft
is light.
That's
not going to walk in the door.
The draft is light this year.
Yeah.
It's not a deep draft. And sitting there and sticking a guy like when they were when they went to back-to-back Eastern Conferences. Let's not forget that. I did on Monday, back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Number one seed the second time. And you get Solomon Hill.
Right.
The Pacers right now can't wait for a number one draft pick to develop 3.5 to 4 years later.
Correct.
They cannot do that, in my opinion. The 20th pick could be valuable to somebody else.
Right.
The 20th pick could be valuable with next year's number one pick. And the thing to remember about draft picks, when the Pacers were really good and picking at 26, 28, 29, you don't get any better.
Right.
That's not how the Heat got better. The Heat bought everybody.
That's exactly
That's not right. The Spurs did not get LaMarcus Aldridge at number 29 in the draft. You want to tell me he got Tony Parker? 13 years ago.
Right, exactly.
He's 34.
Yeah.
He came in the league when he's 19.
Yeah.
Or he's 33
and scouting Euros and international players.
Sure. Manu Ginobili, great.
Yeah.
Pick 57. Those are called exceptions to the rules.
Right.
Draymond Green's an exception to the rule. Everybody passed on Draymond Green, didn't have position. Yep. Didn't have this, didn't have that. Everybody screwed that one up, got it. It happens.
Yep.
You know what? People screwed up on Steph Curry. Great.
Yeah,
but what the point is, the Pacers aren't screwing up pick 6 or 7. The Pacers aren't going to oops that.
Right.
Pick 20 doesn't give you a player, in my opinion, that jumps into the Pacers roster next year with Paul George's third of 3 years remaining and get that team anywhere closer. So I would hope Larry Bird's a pretty smart guy, I think, pretty basketball junkie, knows his stuff inside and out. If the Pacers are going to play and get to where Bird thinks they are and where I think they're going to be, I think they're going to be better. There's no doubt about it. They can't have all these players play terribly again in the last year. They won't have draft picks in the next couple of years that are going to help them.
Right, because they're going to get better.
They're going to get better and they're going to get deeper.
Yep.
And that could be ridiculous, but they're not going to have a year with Paul George. They almost made the playoffs without Paul George. That's how bad the East is.
Yeah.
So if you're going to build through the draft, you have to be really, really good. And if it doesn't work out, then you're on 2 years to go with Paul George. Because there's no guarantee. I know Paul George can sign with the Pacers for the most money. They're not changing that rule. I know that.
Right.
I got all that.
But he'll have every option
LeBron James, under the sun. LeBron James left Cleveland.
Yeah.
He got out.
Mm-hmm.
Paul George isn't from here.
That's exactly right.
Paul George doesn't live here in the offseason. He hangs out in Los Angeles. So my point is, George Hill's got an expiring contract, correct?
Yes. Yes, he does. That's correct.
You throw in the next two draft picks, first-round picks. You send them to somebody who's got a pretty good roster, wants just to add a veteran guy.
Yeah.
Move it on up, move it around, bring in a bigger player. I don't know. I think from my standpoint, my opinion, that's what's going to make the Pacers better quicker. Not developing Solomon Hill after 3.5 years.
To put a package together to bring in a guy now
who's quality guy
contribute,
that contributes immediately.
Right.
And not a guy like Monte Ellis where you hope it works out because he's 31 and he's been in the league for a little bit. Or a guy like CJ Miles who you think was under the radar and you got him at a decent value and he might wave up and down a little bit.
Like a healthy Eric Gordon who can put 20 in the basket every night, 20 points up.
15, 16, 17 points. Premium guys will get 20. That goes up in that next level.
Sure, sure. Well, an injured Eric Gordon might get away with something like that. But just throwing a name.
Exactly. Your premise is right. Eric Gordon's the wrong guy because he can't stay healthy.
Well, that's right.
Exactly.
IU fans would love to see
got,
it.
So you want to comb through some rosters and figure that out? Well, that's Larry Bird's job.
Right.
Because he's going to dictate to Nate McMillan what he thinks the best offense should be. And he's going to provide those pieces with Kevin Pritchard to bring him those pieces.
And,
so,
and again, here's your Pacers roster going forward.
This isn't Joe Johnson coming
in. Paul George, Monte Ellis for the next 3 years. Rodney Stuckey, CJ Miles for the next two years. LaVoy Allen, Glenn Robinson Jr. for the next two. We're not going to go much farther than that.
You can buy
Miles Turner
out.
For four more years. George Hill has one more year on his contract. Everyone else is a free agent.
If they bought Chase Budinger out for $5 million, they can buy any of those guys out.
Rakeem Christmas is not much to talk about right now. I think you're right. To make a move right away, what's interesting to me about Monte Ellis, CJ Miles, and Rodney Stuckey is if you had these three guys,
that's your second team. It's perfect.
Or change one of them out for George Hill, you have a wonderful looking second team of veterans for a team that could compete in the East.
And
would
then,
it beat Cleveland? No.
And then you can sneak Joe Young into that group.
Exactly. It'd be a really nice looking group to get contributions when your stars have to sit down for a few. But to do that, you do have to have some bigger contributions on a consistent basis with that starting.
Here's what I learned this year.
That starting five.
Monte Ellis.
Turner will pick it up.
Turner,
there's no question.
Turner. barring injury, is going to be just fine. Paul George is a top 10 NBA player. Stop. We don't even have to talk about that. The bothersome fact was, in year one, Monte Ellis was historically bad.
Yes.
For Monte Ellis.
At least five points under his average.
That's not what you pay for.
Right.
And if someone says, hey, he's only making $11 million.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money for that production.
Right.
Because C.J. Miles averaged what last year?
C.J. Miles is $4.5 million. I mean, you'd like more out of him because that's what he is. But,
sure.
But, yeah.
I thought he was 4 years, 28. But anyhow, it's you can get a couple C.J.
Rodney Stuckey was 4 and 28.
Stuckey was 3 for 21, $7 million, okay. Somewhere. But the point is, those guys have to produce. Right. And you can't have the second richest contract on your team underproduce.
Right.
So you tried and thought that would happen. Now, the good news is you've got three more years where it can kick back up.
Mm-hmm.
But let me get this straight. 32, 33, 34.
Right.
Those are facts.
Yeah.
So if you're going to wait for Monte Ellis to hopefully bust it back to the 18, 19 point range and then build through this pick 20 mm-hmm. and build through pick 24 next year or whatever that's going to be, why is Paul George going to stay?
333-2665 is our phone number. Real quickly before we hit this break.
Why is he going to stay?
And here's the other question with that. Miles Turner, you find out they're talking about at center. What does that do with Paul George? Does that leave him at the three, or does that move him, slide him down to the four, which he's already talked about not wanting to do, not loving the idea of? I mean, I know there's ways around that everybody says, yeah. But he was extremely vocal about not wanting to do that. And now you're going to, whatever you do with the draft in the offseason here, and then also ask him to make the change that he's already come out and said he doesn't want to do?
There were times in the Toronto series, who's he guarding? He's always guarding the best perimeter player.
That's exactly
they go right. Hide. They can hide other guys on the fours.
Yeah.
If they're not LaMarcus Aldridge, if they're not stud fours, they don't want George there because they want him in foul problems.
They don't want George there anyways. They want him on a guy who can handle the ball.
And you get a body that can stay mm-hmm. with a four. Yeah. Those are interchangeable parts. But what I think the Pacers do need is someone to lead that offense, not a shared backcourt. Right. Sharing things doesn't work. It's like having two quarterbacks in football. It doesn't work out. And Monte Ellis and George Hill showed you this year that it probably, unless there's some huge philosophical change, which right. that Nate McMillan's going to be a part of, there's not a reason Frank Vogel didn't work out.
Frank
here.
Reacted in midseason to his roster. Nate says he's going to react to his roster. Neither of those situations are saying we are definitely nope. going small and trying to score tons of points. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass will be in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Back to the NBA, where we've got a game in on both series. Game two tonight in Oakland for Golden State and Oklahoma City. And, of course, that's the somewhat surprising one is Oklahoma City, who was down, 13 at half? 13 at half. And to come back, have a great third and fourth quarter, held Golden State to 14 fourth quarter points and wins 108-102 on the road. It's way too early to start saying
the series is flipped and all that,
but technically speaking,
it's
it is.
Close. Well, we told you on Monday they had to win that game. That was going to be the game they had to win. And we told you exactly how it was going to happen. You got to have a bad night from Curry and Thompson, and you better hope it's on the road. You better not hope it's at your place when you're down 2-0.
20 of 47 shooting for Curry and Thompson. And, you didn't get 40-point games out of these guys.
Well, what was the interesting part about it was a game of two halves. In the first half, all Golden State did was when Oklahoma City jumped from the three-point line, they took layup after layup after layup, and then they'd move the ball for an open three.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma City had enough just to punch in it and stay close. Russell Westbrook had 3 points in the first half. It's his worst half ever in the playoffs. They won a basketball game.
Yeah.
Why? Well, a funny thing happened in the second half. In a game,
his numbers for the game are phenomenal.
In a game of adjustments, it happened. He had 19 in the third quarter by himself. Tell me how many points Golden State scored in the fourth quarter as a team.
14.
See, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly.
But Russell Westbrook, what he did is exactly the good Russell Westbrook, what we told you he could do when he plays that way. There's not a shot he wouldn't take, and he took most of them and made most of them.
Right.
He also had a ton of assists. They stayed big with the big lineup. They took their chances guarding the three, hoping that they wouldn't be abused out there. Mm-hmm. But you know what happened in the second half? Did you see any Golden State layups? Not too many.
Yeah.
You know why? They started settling for threes. They wanted to take on those big guys out there. And when they don't have that big shooting night, you never see Golden State really play like that. I think they were 1-10, did I read, in the fourth quarter from the three-point line. They're coming down the floor just chucking.
Just chucking it because they think they can make everything.
They did in the first half.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the tough angle. But they didn't get second shots because Oklahoma City stayed big and they got rebounds. 22-5, fast break points in the first half I saw. None in the second half.
Russell Westbrook, 7-21 shooting, but 11-14 at the free throw line. He gets to the line. He only shot three pointers. He was statistically extremely bad during the regular season, and I think the last couple of years shooting threes against Oklahoma or against Golden State rather.
Yes,
27 points, 6 rebounds, 12 assists, 7 steals, only 3 turnovers.
Massive game. He
can drive you
massive
nuts.
Game.
There's no question about that.
And you know
but
what,
he is so talented and so versatile
on this game. Is Kevin Durant missed 8 shots in a row in the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
I mean, he played terrible.
And then just comes down, make a juke move, and sinks it when they need a bucket in a big spot.
But Durant was terrible, yeah. And they won a game.
Yeah, exactly.
That we didn't talk about that on Monday. We didn't talk about how Kevin Durant was
going to have an off
night.
How they're going to win on the road,
yeah.
Doing it when both guys have
and
bad
Durant
halves.
And Durant does nothing
or whatever
in this fourth quarter. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Mm-hmm. And they find a way to win. And the Golden State beauty is when they move the basketball and make shots, yeah, they're really hard to beat.
Yeah.
But what they decided to do was, in the first half, they were going to take the three away. Okay, Golden State took a ton of layups. In the second half, they said, hey, all right, we're going to clog the paint, and we're not going to let you drive and get easy twos. We're going to make you work for everything. And they didn't. And the second shots were few and far between. And when Curry and Thompson, boy, they can get this. They shoot it so quickly.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't go in, sometimes it's 1-on-3. Sometimes it's 2-on-4.
Sure.
And the rebounding numbers – they don't get those spurts on you. We talked about this. We thought that Oklahoma City had to keep the game close in the fourth quarter so they could go punch by punch with them.
Right.
What happened at the end of the third quarter? They were down 12-11, chipped away. It was 88-83 at the end of the three?
Got it down to 2.
Somewhere right in there.
Or 3.
And then, boom, at 10:30 to go fourth quarter, they lead 90-88, so first lead since 12-10 or 11-10 or whatever it was in the first quarter. So they didn't pack it in. Mm-hmm. Billy Donovan found something that worked and stuck with it. He didn't panic.
No, at halftime, they showed him his speech to the team on halftime.
We've been here before. We've been down again. We know us. We know what we do better. Mm-hmm. Stick with it. Play hard and get after it.
Well,
and you still got to make shots. But Russell Westbrook was the key to that because I don't remember in that halftime speech saying, let's get out of his way and let him go nuts in the third quarter.
Right. No,
because that's what
he did.
And he's good enough to do that. But what he didn't do in the fourth quarter was go too nuts where you let Golden State back in the game.
You got a combined 55 minutes out of Steven Adams and Enes Kanter.
Fantastic.
They stayed big. Serge Ibaka played 36 minutes. They stayed with their big lineup. I mean, they wanted to pound it inside. It made Andrew Bogut irrelevant. He didn't even shoot a shot. 0 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 17 minutes. So they went small on the Golden State side. All of their three of their starters, or three big starters, each played 40 minutes. But, you know, Oklahoma City, they're not an ugly team to watch, but they got to keep a little bit of ugliness in their lineup to because that's the one thing that differentiates them a little bit. Yes, Golden State defensively can really get in you. And yes, they've got some guys that'll drive you nuts and be a little physical
Draymond
with you.
Green.
But they're not as good at it, apparently, right now as Oklahoma City.
They're not. And Oklahoma City has another big chip on their shoulder, too. They just beat San Antonio. They won 2 games in San Antonio, and now they've won the first game in Golden State.
There's a lot of confidence.
Let's remember, San Antonio lost 2 home games this year,
right.
And Golden State lost 1 home game this year.
Right.
And now Oklahoma City beat them twice
three
in
times
that series.
In the last 2 weeks. Yep. That's yeah, exactly. And,
well,
and
that's real.
And remember, you know,
that's
all this builds up to the point where you still have 2 superstars on this team that can do, that can have these crazy quarters, these crazy halves, whatever they end up being. It's for Oklahoma City. You could have said in the past maybe they were physical, but you didn't say how tough they could be. And but that's both a mentally and a physical thing. But they've got just enough of it right now. And I think we said that with Golden State last year. You're surprised at how physically tough they could be at times also. You're starting to see that a little bit with Oklahoma City.
And why the matchup for Golden State is not the one they wanted. You wanted an older San Antonio. You wanted a team that was more finesse, that right. liked to get out and get after it, just like you did. You're kind of playing your same style. And again, with the confidence Oklahoma City has now, we got to remember a couple things. This is why seven-game series.
That's game one.
They right. fascinate me. Well, the first rule is, everybody knows this, mm-hmm. the series doesn't start till the road team wins. Bang, there game on. Let's go. Let's boogie. Yeah. Steven Adams has never been asked in his life.
Right.
to perform at this level
in a game
for
five
this long.
Or a game seven.
Serge Ibaka is a really nice second fiddle.
Yeah.
And Enes Kanter.
Never been here.
Never been here. He's been. Yeah. He was with the Jazz before he moved here.
Right.
The Jazz haven't been in the playoffs.
Deion Waiters played 30 minutes. This is a guy that was a cast off.
Super athletic yeah. player. Yeah. He gives problems. He can help defend the perimeter. He's not yeah. the best defensive player, but he can run and jump and get in the way. And then the shoe goes on the other foot. Well, we'll stay on the same foot. Kevin Durant's probably not going to have a bad fourth quarter like that no. again.
46 minutes. Look, he's
gotta,
your guy. I mean,
what are you going to do?
You
got to
do it, but can you do it every night?
I think you can because, number one, Golden State plays quick possessions. You're not grinding 23 seconds on the shot clock.
Right, you're not bouncing a guy off your chest for 10, 12 seconds.
It's the ballet. You're up and down the court.
Right.
That's not.
That's right.
And guess what? When you're making shots, you're never tired.
No, it all feels good.
But Golden State's issue is, how many games are they going to have where Curry and Thompson go ice cold? Right. 14 points mm-hmm. in a quarter. That's a four possession period for them. You saw it in the first mm-hmm. half. They go layup, steal, three, layup, steal, three. Boom. Game was a 2-point game, went up to 14, timeout, Oklahoma yeah. City. They score 14 points like that. They score 14 points in a quarter because what Oklahoma City's adjustment was forced them to take contested tough threes that mm-hmm. didn't go in for once.
Right.
And the baskets they had to get going to the hoop. You had two guys in there that bothered shots. You had two guys in there eating up a ton of space. There weren't a ton of driving lanes for either of those guys. You saw some of those shots in the first half. Thompson's fading away in the lane, banking it on the top of the mm-hmm. glass and going in.
That's not
going
to happen.
Well, you don't make a lot of those. And Golden State never got into their rhythm. They never got comfortable because of what Oklahoma City did. So now Steve Kerr has to not come out and say after the game, well, we shot some of those shots too quickly. No, Steve, come on.
You do that all year long.
When they go in, they're great. Right, it's the greatest offense ever. But I think his point is, they have to recognize when that's not falling, it doesn't have to be the first pass.
Well, and look, I hate to make this comparison, but we saw this all year long with Indiana basketball. Yep. When you move the ball, when you commit to moving the ball and finding the best look, that's the best kind of offense. That Golden State does that.
And
they have the shooters that can get away with coming down and draining them.
And it almost felt like in the last 5 or 6 minutes of that game, it was the three first and nothing else. And if you got the offensive rebound, you got something in the lane, great. But right. it felt like they were down four. It was like, I think it was 92-88, somewhere in there, 98-94. And everything was hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. You right. never saw Golden State move it six passes, shift everybody, and then get an easy layup
right.
where they didn't have to knock a 24-footer down with somebody running in their face.
And, you know, let's be fair.
When it works,
Some of that is the MVP who, he can make everything and everybody's seen him make everything and he wants to take it on his shoulder. You can get a little greedy in that situation. Nobody's going to fault him for taking it. He takes it all year long for a couple years now and he's been great. But sometimes it does have to be the move it situation. Find the best shot.
And the reason this is surprising is they only lost 9 games on the year and only one of those at home. So it's not very often you say, geez, Golden State stunk, and that's what Oklahoma City is going to have to figure out down the series.
But we hoped and thought it would be a fascinating series, and it already is. Game 2 is tomorrow night. Tonight, however, is the Cavs, and we'll talk about the Cavs in just a couple minutes. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is a phone number. Again, programming note, we have Reds baseball right after the show, 7 o'clock with Cleveland in town. Back again tomorrow night, 7 o'clock with Cleveland in town. They lost the two up in Cleveland.
Home run derby.
That we had Monday and Tuesday night. Friday night, we have them again with Seattle in town, 7:05. And Saturday, Seattle stays in town, but it's a 4 o'clock game here on WGCL. 333-2665 is a phone number, not all that surprising. The number one and number two seeds playing in the Eastern Conference Finals. Game one last night, won easily by the Cleveland Cavaliers, an easy game, and the Cavs just shot the lights out of the place. 55% shooting on the game, did not rely on threes, which is something they actually did in the series before, just shot the lights out from three all of a sudden. But no, kept it going to the basket, kept it inside the arc, and dominated the game thoroughly. Won the rebounding match 45-23. Obviously, when you shoot it that well, there aren't as many rebounds around. But they just made mincemeat of the Toronto Raptors, and we kind of expected that. You look up and down this Raptor roster, I think you have to give them a lot of credit for the record they put up on the course of the year and getting the 2 seed in doing so. But the reality is they just don't match up. Yeah, they just don't match up against this team. This team has got 3 superstars, and their bench is playing awfully, awfully well.
And it doesn't help that Valanciunas isn't playing either. Give them a little pass on that, but we won't give them a pass on is what are they known for? They're known for playing some defense and having a backcourt that can score. Tell me about how Kyle Lowry finished up his awesome Game 7 performance.
The starters on this team finished 1 of 15 on three-pointers. We saw this all during the Pacers.
And give me Lowry's...
0 of 8, Lowry and DeRozan from three-point
line. Give me Lowry's line for the series.
13 of 21, or 31 shooting, rather. Lowry, 4 of 14 shooting, 0 of 7 from three-pointers.
How many assists?
4 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 turnovers. That's pretty much it.
How many points?
8.
So he didn't even
18
hit.
For DeRozan. So these guys averaged 20 apiece.
How many foul shots?
0 combined between the two.
When you settle for jumpers, when you settle for stuff. And
their starters had 4 combined attempts.
They're in the deep end of the pool. And after back-to-back 7-game series where you could argue they should have lost both of them, you can make
let's be fair, gritted them out.
That's my point, though.
You're worn down, sure.
The grind against the lounge chair guys. The lounge chair guys jump off. They don't even have to worry about any rust. Everything is going in. They got a 30-point lead. Boom, see you later. Game's over. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's exactly what Cleveland wants to do. That's 9 in a row for them. Awesome. They've knocked it around. But what we need to remember is that in the league where you play for pay, Oklahoma City was down 33.5 to San Antonio. Came back and won. Here's the difference. DeRozan and Kyle Lowry wouldn't play on Cleveland's starting lineup.
No.
Kyrie Irving, you would take over Lowry.
Absolutely.
And whoever the 2-guard is, LeBron.
J.R. Smith.
Okay, maybe you could fit him in.
DeRozan, I'd put DeRozan over Smith. But
Smith might be a better defender.
Yeah.
So you don't need another guy. But the point about Toronto is they're not at full speed. And what they've done has not been smoke and mirrors, because I don't think you can do it for 14 games and smoke and mirrors. But you're asking a lot of Corey Joseph to get you 15 a night. You're asking a lot of Patrick Patterson to get you 15 a night.
Cleveland, when healthy, aren't scoring. Is head and shoulders above the rest of the East.
They are.
I mean, that's just the fact of the matter.
They are.
And the Heat could give them a game if they were healthy, but they weren't. And now you've got the Raptors who, you know, might give them a great game if they were healthy, but they're not.
The Raptors will – the game they will win is the game where they hit 18 three-pointers.
Yeah, game 3 or game 4 at home.
And beat them, and that's going to be the thing. Well, you're right, because Cleveland is good. LeBron – is LeBron. Kyrie Irving is developing into a nice player.
11 of 13 shooting for LeBron.
I mean, that's the definition of efficiency.
That's how you take it over, right?
Lowry needed 14 shots to get 8 points. Yeah. Do the math the other direction.
Kyrie Irving, 11 of 17.
Right. And when they all go in, they all go in.
And for the Cavs, I think the one thing you might have been afraid of, and my dad's a big Cavs fan, being from the area, so he watches this. He was frustrated as heck in the first round because he says these guys shoot too many three-pointers.
Yep.
They're guys that can get to the basket. They shoot way too many three-pointers.
And how many threes
did they
make?
In the last series.
All of them went
in. But here's the thing. In the course of that series, they shot so lights out that the expectation you have as a fan is that they're going to come out in game 1 and fall in love with it once again and just try to trust it, and they didn't.
And how many threes did they hit?
They only shot 20, 7 of 20.
There you go.
So, I mean, they didn't go crazy at it. The starters did not go crazy at
it. And
LeBron
went
0 for 1 on three-pointers. You know, he was 11 of 12 inside the arc. So
and the other thing is you have to remember.
They played smart because they're the veteran team.
What would you rather do? Let LeBron have driving lanes and Irving have driving lanes and Love operate, or would you make him have to shoot historically great percentages?
Right.
The Hawks tried a little bit of both, and neither worked
yeah.
because the Cavaliers are better than they are. But I think that isn't the worst way to go, as you just mentioned. Can that continue throughout, I don't know, 5 more games where they just shoot lights out threes? That's going to be the adjustment Dwayne Casey's going to have to make. Are they going to live with allowing the attacking the rim? No Valanciunas doesn't help things. Biombo's not going to score you a ton of points down there. We know that. He's not offensively – he can get every rebound. He'll help you rebound, but he's not going to help you score. So there's a whole nother ball of maple syrup there for the folks north of the border. But what makes Toronto go? It's not hard to figure out, and Cleveland figured it out. Slow down the backcourt, make everybody else beat you.
Yeah.
Well, Toronto's backcourt is going to have to play above and beyond it, because unlike Oklahoma City, unlike the Warriors, they don't have that second-level guy
right.
who's been in the league that's been a volume scorer or has been trusted to run the show.
They've got to get Lowry and DeRozan to go nuts.
They don't even have a guy like Barbosa that comes out and can and fire it up. You know, he did it all those years with Phoenix. You got some veteran guys in that. They depend so heavily now with Valanciunas out. That's going to be the tough part. So whether he's – they might have to at some point just be like, hey, we know you're 70%. Can you hop out for 24 minutes and give us something?
Yeah.
Clog the lane up, help us do something.
Some interesting calls in this game, and I don't know if it's the only thing Toronto's
got. Not as interesting
got.
As the non-travel call in the
Well, yes, but flagrant foul, suddenly the story of game one in a blowout. None of them I would consider violent, but you had a number of calls that could have gone one way or another. It seems to me Toronto's got one shot, you know, well, two shots maybe. DeRozan and Lowry go crazy, but that's not going to last for four wins. They're not going to win four games doing that.
That's why they're going to get swept or beaten five.
But make the game a rumble and make it rough and maybe, oops, somebody steps on somebody's ankle and that helps you.
But you know who their main rumbler is?
Yeah, the Valanciunas.
That's what hurts you. So you've got – you can't – we asked the Pacers for years to turn Roy Hibbert into a guy that was a little bit meaner, a little bit tougher like that. But but if you're not, you're not. So Biombo gets a little nasty. Yeah, I got you
There's a call that LeBron got hit about midway down the lane by Carroll.
I didn't see it.
He did not go in, he went in an aggressive manner to
above
make
the
sure
shoulder?
No, to make sure he stopped the layup. It was not called a flagrant foul, but it was clear he was not going for anything more.
Is that where he grabbed him in the armpit
it.
Like under here?
Basically.
Yeah, I did see that. Never mind.
Yeah. I don't think it was a flagrant foul, but at the same time, it was pretty obvious he was doing a physical foul on purpose, nothing else. All he was trying to do was stop every movement from that point forward.
Yes.
And is that a flagrant foul?
No.
I don't think so.
In my opinion, it's not, but I think the point was the game was getting a little chippy and they had to put a stop to it somewhere.
What about when Love swings his elbows?
That, to me, is not a foul. He's making a basketball play. The guy's face is in his way. He's not even looking in that direction.
You've got to give him some room.
They're protecting the defensive player when they should be protecting the game. Not the player.
Defensive player sticks his face and then gets hit in the nose.
And when
maybe
you
shouldn't
watch
stick
it,
his face
and
in
when
there.
You watch it in slow motion replay, I even thought last night, and we got to hurry on this. Last night, Klay Thompson's looking up for the ball. He runs it. Westbrook comes into him and runs into him, and Thompson gets a flagrant for that.
Folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll talk to you Monday. You've been in the zone.